And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
The prime thing is you have to win. You have to win. Otherwise, you can't be a success in professional football.
Every single day I come in here, I think about winning. You know, I don't do this year round to come in and not make the playoffs. I'm sick of that shit, and I want to keep winning.
You're listening to The State of the Nation with Jimmy Durkin, Vic Tafer, Tashawn Reed, and Ted Nguyen on the Athletic Podcast Network.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to State of the Nation here on the Athletic Podcast Network. I am Jimmy Durkin, joined, as always, by Vic Tafer, Tashawn Reed, and Ted Nguyen. The Raiders are back from their bye week, getting set to take on the Minnesota Vikings, and they're going to be a well-rested team. Antonio Pierce giving them the whole week off, really. They got all last week off, back for meetings Monday, finally back to practice on Wednesday, but we talked last week about how long it took to get to this bye week, going 12 games before you get to the bye. Then to get this recharge is probably got to be nice. Rare for NFL teams to give you this much time off for the bye, but I think probably part of the kind of Antonio Pierce experience where he wants to be player friendly and listen to the players. And so they should be a little bit energized, I would think, this week.
Yeah, I think so. He mentioned Monday's meetings were like the first day of school. Like, everyone's, hey, how you doing? Shaking hands and like patting on the back. What'd you do? And like, kind of like after summer vacation. So I think everyone definitely is refreshed. I know Max Crosby didn't talk yesterday, but I saw him in the locker room. He looks like he's definitely doing a lot better health-wise than he was before the bye. So I think he'll play, and Colton Miller looked fine. So I think everyone's kind of feeling healthier. You know, like you mentioned, 12 games is a long time to play, and they've had a lot of besides just a physical toll, a lot's happened, emotionally and spiritually, and it's been a really long season for these guys. So I think they're definitely looking at this as, you got 5 games. I mean, the odds to make the playoffs are pretty slim, but you never know. I mean, you got to put your best foot forward, try to win every game and see what happens. So that's the mentality. I think they got 2 games coming up at home, which definitely they've been good at home. So I think they're in a good spot, mentally and physically.
Yeah, I think, outside of the bye being late in the season, another part of it is they have, 2 games in the next 7 days. Obviously, they play the Vikings on Sunday, but they also turn around and host the Chargers next Thursday. And so I can see giving the guys a little extra rest, given they're going to have to sandwich those 2 games together pretty quickly. But, also part of it, like Vic said, is, the team has been through a lot the first half of the season, and some pretty important guys, not just Max Crosby, but also Colton Miller, has been dealing with a shoulder injury the last month or so. And he came out toward the end of the last game, and I think he didn't practice yesterday either. And so had a couple of key injuries. They also want to give some guys some time to rest up and get ready. And so I think it was the right approach by the staff.
What do you guys think are be some differences that we see from the team as far as personnel wise? Think anybody's gonna, are there gonna be any surprise starters? Anybody losing their jobs coming out the bye week?
Well, Marcus Peters isn't here anymore.
You're trying to get them fired on their day off.
Hey man, Marcus Peters got cut, while we were gone. So that's obviously they're gonna have a new starter at outside cornerback, but that's the only one that's, apparent in terms of who might be in the mix for that. Obviously we've talked about Jack Jones, who they, added off of waivers. Antonio Pierce has history with him, but, can't forget about Jacorian Bennett, who, started the season as a starter and kind of lost his job due to injury and performance. He might have a chance to get back into it. Brandon Faison, who hasn't played or practiced all year after a lengthy stint on IR, he practiced yesterday for the first time as a limited participant. So there's a few different guys that could be in the mix to replace Marcus Peters. We'll see who it ends up being, but that's sort of the main one just in terms of a personnel.
Yeah, I never really got to see their plans for Faison. You know, he got hurt so early on, so I think they signed him. And there's some talk he might be a starter. Some talk he might just be a depth guy, comes in on passing down. So I'm curious to see how quickly he gets worked in and what exactly his role is. But he's a guy who's played it before, and you've seen his skills. Definitely is a solid cover guy with some aggression. So I think we'll see Jack Jones get his shot. So yeah, they got some guys who definitely I think it's a play for in a secondary. And I think Robertson's always got something to prove. So I think you will see these guys get a chance to really kind of, hopefully, in their minds, lock down a spot, you know, going forward for, you know, in terms of being a starter.
And we mentioned the slim playoff hopes. Obviously, this was not a team that we came into this season really thinking that they were going to be a playoff contender. But the AFC is so jumbled. It has not been, the dominant. There hasn't been the dominant teams out there. You look at the teams that are currently in line for the playoffs, especially at the bottom of the wild card stand. These teams like the Steelers, the Colts, the Browns, those are teams that are 7-5 and like don't, either by quarterback situation with injuries or, all three of those teams are teams that don't have their current starting quarterback, or just, the Steelers who Vic, as you've written about every week in Vic's picks, are seem like a fraud despite what their record shows. This is a season where they're not completely out of it. And you also look at man, if they had found a way to steal that game against the Dolphins, they'd be in that mix. But this does feel like a week where you're playing the Vikings. It's kind of the make or break week to decide whether or not you really can have a shot to go for a playoff berth over the final month.
I think the problem is there's so many teams. And right now they're 13th. So even if you win these next two home games, you're 7-7. How many teams are you going to jump of the 30? Are you going to be in 10th? I mean, that's still a lot to
run the table.
All right, let's go. Let's do it. I'm in.
Yeah, I mean, they basically can't lose the rest of the season. Like, even though as jumbled as the AFC is, I do think it's still going to take 10 wins most likely to make the playoffs this year. And to get there, they can't really lose the rest of the season. And I think it helps that they have a couple teams left on their schedule who are kind of in a similar position as them, whether it's the Chargers or the Broncos or the Colts. So if it comes down to, a tiebreaker type situation, maybe that could help them out. But, they've been here before. 2021, their chances weren't great either, and they managed to pull it off. So can't completely rule it out. It is unlikely, but I think, for this team, whether they make the playoffs or not, I think it's going to be the most important thing is going to be how they look as they finish the stretch. If they finish, 8-9 or 9-8, but every single game came down to the wire and they fought to the end, I think that's something that you could potentially build on regardless, moving forward.
Being competitive in these games and not getting blown out and losing every game to me would be the best position to be in. So you get better draft position. I mean, because even if they squeak into the playoffs, what are you going to do? I mean, you're not really going to be a competitive team in the playoffs. And yeah, to me, draft position is most important at this point. But there's some winnable games, but the road games are going to be difficult in Kansas City and against the Colts, who are a much better team than people anticipated. But yeah, to me, the best case scenario is just being competitive in these games and losing because, we've seen in the past few years, how much winning a couple meaningless games have cost this team as far as draft position in the last few 4 or 5 years. So that to me is the best case scenario, and I know
not for Antonio Pierce.
Go have that conversation with Antonio Pierce. Tell him that's the best deal.
I mean, you're not obviously you're never going to purposely tank, but I'm just saying, we've seen that. This happened, the same scenario happened year after year, where they have a little bit of hope, they win some games, and all of a sudden, they're like 3-4 spots down in the draft, and they cost themselves a blue chip type of prospect.
That's true. It's definitely true. So we're saying either win out or lose out. Those are the two.
Yeah.
No, he doesn't even want them to win out. He doesn't want them in the playoffs at all. It's like they're not going to do anything there.
He says he'll lose out. Yeah, so I'm saying either you win out or lose out. That's what he's saying. So one or the other.
Last year in week 18, everyone was laughing at the Texans when Lovie Smith went out there and got him a week 18 win that cost him the number one pick. And I think he maybe cost him his job. And look what happened. The Texans got the number two pick and they got the better quarterback. So never know. It's not always as simple, even though this is a draft where you do want to be as high as possible.
Right. You never know. Drafts are hard to figure out. People spend millions of dollars about in quarterbacks and really have no idea. Just kind of throwing darts, trying to get lucky. So
yeah, and Texas probably would have drafted Bryce Young too, but that's right. Another conversation.
Let's talk about this game. Vikings, they are getting Justin Jefferson back. They are sticking with Josh Dobbs. Maybe, you know, they kind of follow in our strategy from last week of trying to make sure that he's not super comfortable, because there was some chatter that they might go away from Dobbs. He had such a weird season. I mean, a quarterback being traded twice, played preseason games for one team, played regular season games for two other teams. And he's had his moments, but he's also had his ugly moments. And so they are sticking with him. And we've joked that the more familiar he gets with his teammates, the worse he's gotten. So maybe this little bit of uncertainty is all part of the strategy.
Yeah, I think we saw the first two games of the Vikings. Everyone's like, oh my God, how is this guy available? This guy is so good. What are the Browns doing? Blah, blah, blah. And you see the last two games, like, ah, now I get it. So it's a very, I'm sure, very frustrating guy to have as your a quarterback, if you're like, you know, coach, because you really don't know what you're going to get. You're going to get a guy who's making plays or a guy who's making a negative play. So there seems to be no real in between for him. So I'm sure that's why it's been, he's been kind of around so much in his career. But clearly there's upside there. He clearly has the ability to make plays with his legs and also his arm. And I'm sure it's a guy hard to prepare for, because you don't really know what he's going to do. No one knows what he's going to do. I'm sure he knows what he's going to do. So I'm sure that's part of the, you know, toughness of preparing for the Vikings this week.
The Vikings mismanaged this situation, because it was very obvious the less Josh Dobbs knows his teammates, the better he plays. They should have kept him like in a hotel room far away from the team and just like eject him into the games on Sundays. But, you know, they let him get to know his teammates, and now it's all like they ruined it. They ruined
those
it.
Bastards.
they should have made him keep his apartment in Arizona, just fly him in on game days. Like, you don't even practice with the team. You don't live in the state. You're living out in Arizona. We'll fly you in for game days. Or hell, he might still have his house in Cleveland. I don't know. Who knows how many residencies he got here with the wild year he's had.
Obviously, it'll help him having Justin Jefferson back. You know, we'll see what level of Justin Jefferson it is coming off of not playing for however many weeks it's been. But, you know, he's arguably the best receiver in the league coming into this season. And, you know, especially in a week where the Raiders are kind of figuring things out at cornerback, it'd be interesting to see, like, who gets that matchup for them, or if they rotate, you know, who's across from him throughout the game. And so, you know, his Vikings offense has been, you know, it's had its low moments, but it's been pretty good this season, you know, just despite losing Kirk Cousins to that Achilles injury. And so be a good test for this Raiders defense. I mean, they've been playing at a pretty good level all season. They were able to hang with the Dolphins. I know they had some breakdowns against the Chiefs, but I think seeing what their plan is for Justin Jefferson would be interesting, kind of with this hodgepodge group of cornerbacks, and seeing, I guess, what version of Josh Dobbs they go against as well. So it's a lot going up in the air in this game.
Yeah, I think we'll see that old classic. I want to be careful saying this term, but the old Patriot philosophy as far as taking away a number one receiver. They're going to bracket Jefferson a lot, and then whoever they think is going to be their best corner is going to play one-on-one with the team's number two receiver. And that's going to be a big matchup, whoever is going to be against Jordan Addison, who had a pretty bad game against the Bears, but he's been pretty good throughout his rookie year. And then obviously you have to stop TJ Hawkinson too. But I think, you know, the Raiders have pretty good coverage linebackers, and Morig has been pretty good matchup player, but Hawkinson's, you know, one of the best tight ends in the league. So that's going to be a matchup you watch out for. But yeah, Jefferson is going to obviously make this Vikings offense a lot tougher to stop. But it'll be interesting to see who's going to be the guy playing one-on-one against Jordan Addison, because that's the guy that the Raiders coaching staff, you know, quote unquote, have the most confidence in, or they think that's their number one corner.
In terms of the Raiders offense going up against that Brian Flores defense, he is, you know, they've been blitzing at, you know, crazy rates. And so it's going to be an opportunity for, you know, us to see what O'Connell can do against a team that might blitz more than half the time. We've seen at times, especially when he first took over, that first start he made when Garoppolo was injured, where he struggled to make quick decisions. I think he's gotten a little bit better at that, but this will be a week to see kind of how can he adjust and adapt to read the blitzes, make those protection calls, and be able to get the ball out quickly when he needs to.
Yeah, it's just weird because he's here, you know, like, talk about Aiden O'Connell, always getting better. He's definitely more poised, more confident. Like, we see improvement. And then you look at the stats. They have 46 points in the last three games. And this offense just can't, all year long, they just can't score points. And they have talent. And they have, we've talked about all the guys they have. I mean, they have Jacoby Myers is playing probably better than what I thought he was going to play. And they got, you know, obviously Davante Adams and Josh Jacobs, Michael Mayer's making plays now the last few games. So just they have a lot of guys. So you should be able to beat a blitz with so many targets who just, you know, turn around and the ball will come at you. So again, it's just, I know we've talked about the quarterback issues and the line issues, but it really is kind of it's a real big mystery why they can't score points. And it's been a problem all year long. And can they fix it in the next 5 weeks? We'll see. But there's no real good excuse why they can't score. There's enough talent here. They should be able to score some points.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I think they are a better unit under O'Connell than they were with Garoppolo. But I think they also played some really tough defenses. You know, they played the Jets, elite defense, Miami, who's playing. I mean, once Jalen Ramsey was inserted, they're playing at one of the top. They've been one of the top pass defenses in the league. And then Kansas City, we know, is the top three type of unit as well. So they play three elite units. The Vikings are like kind of a fringe top 10 unit, but they're still pretty good. So they've had like a murderer's row as far as defenses go. I think it's pretty hard to put up numbers against these type of defenses. But I think the Vikings aren't in that top tier. So we'll see what they can do against the Vikings. But the problem with going against the Vikings defense is much different than the trendy type of defenses we see in the league. You don't see teams blitz as much, and the way they blitz is that they do read blitzes. So they read which way you slide your protection, and whichever way you slide your protection, they drop off. And then the other side, that's when they bring extra pressure. They cover your hot routes off. They play off coverage, and they're kind of playing with zone eyes in the beginning. So it's tough to hit those classic like zone beater concepts. If you try to hit a quick slant, they're going to be right on top of it. If you hit, you know, try to hit a quick out, they're right on top of it. So you have to kind of push your routes a little bit further. But by pushing a little further, you know, you're kind of inviting the blitz to hit you as well. So it's like you have to have these answers that you don't typically have in your offense, which is why it's so hard going against a Brian Flores type of defense. But they had the bye week, so they had some time to install some extra stuff. So we'll see if that plays into, gives them a little bit of an advantage going against this type of defense.
Yeah, this could be a tough matchup for O'Connell as a rookie quarterback. I mean, when he's blitzed this year, he's been pretty bad. He's toward the bottom of the league pretty much across the board and all those major stats. And, you know, I mean, we've seen him get sort of rattled at certain moments when he's pressured or hold the ball too long or try to make plays that aren't there. And so he's going to have to show a lot of growth, I think, to have a lot of success against this aggressive Vikings defense. And, you know, this Raiders offensive line, like, you know, as we talked about all year, it's regressed. And so we'll see how they handle that additional pressure. And then their tight ends, while Michael Mayer has gotten better, I would say, like, they still aren't known for blocking, you know, when it comes to their tight ends. So, yeah, they're going to have to get the ball out quickly and you know, try to find a way to make them pay for being so aggressive. But this would be one of the bigger challenges so far for O'Connell since he stepped in as a starter.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep. You heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Tashawn, you wrote on Thursday about Max Crosby, and you know, we talked last week about how kind of just the craziness of, in him that made him go out there and play, and you know, and about him as you know, potential defensive player of the year candidate, especially now that Ted's guy Deron Bland got cooked, you know, little sketchy candidacy there now, Ted. But what new did you learn maybe about Max as you were kind of doing that story and really talking basically to everybody who's been a big part of coaching him at the NFL level?
Yeah, I think, you know, something that jumped out was obviously the last couple of years, everybody's kind of come around on Max being like this star level pass rusher and edge rusher in general, and this really confident player. But, you know, talking to Brinson Buckner about how he came in as a rookie, like usually, you know, those small school guys, like undersized, they come in kind of, you know, quiet and, you know, lucky to be here type of vibe. But Max came in like, you know, emanating confidence, like he already knew he belonged and was ready to go out and prove himself. And so I didn't cover him that year. I wasn't really around on the beat yet, so I didn't know that he kind of walked in the door that way. But it kind of helps inform, you know, the steady rise that he's had. You know, he's always had that inner self-belief in himself along with this, you know, kind of maniacal work ethic and, you know, steadily improved every year to become what he is today. And so, you know, I mean, it's one of the best day three picks, I'm sure, in Raiders history so far, just kind of seeing his development, how he continues to get better and, you know, kind of has this relentless drive to keep pushing moving forward. And, you know, I think this is probably one of the first years where while he's been on that steady upward trajectory, we've seen the defense follow him, you know, along that rise as well and start to play better as a unit this season, you know, and kind of gives some hope of maybe him not ending up like another Khalil Mack type guy where he's great, but the defense just continues to suck around him. Like he's shown this year that he's has the potential to lift the group up as a whole. And, you know, I think that's something that regardless of how the season goes for the Raiders, they can, you know, find some optimism in for that side of the ball moving forward. Because, you know, as we talked about, they got him locked in on that pretty team friendly deal, you know, for the next few years. And so he's going to be that anchor that's in place for him. And whoever the next regime is, now they just got to go in and build around him and keep this progress up that they've made.
All right, first of all, I was not the one pushing the Deron Bland defensive play. I said people were. Check I said other tape. People Check were pushing tape. It.
You're a person, and you're the one who brought him up.
And I actually published a video that showed that Deron Bland was getting burned and was just getting lucky right before the game, which made me look pretty smart, by the way, because he did get burned by the Seahawks. But it wasn't me. I just heard it from multiple podcasts, and, you know, I was – just looking at
why you cheating on other podcasts? Don't listen to other podcasts. We're the only one you need to listen to.
Man. Stand on business, man. Yeah, I got Vic's always hedging his bets. I got Ted taking back his word picks.
I'm always hedging my bets.
Stand on your word,
oh,
Ted.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, Vic, we could talk a little bit about Max when he first got here. I mean, A, the biggest difference, the tattoos was not
one tattoo on his body.
I mean, I remember when we sat down with him in that media. He's a former State of the Nation guest back in those days. When we used to, especially almost all the rookies would always come on the show. Wasn't there a backstory about like him? I think maybe it was a tie-in with his brother. Like, did some Calvin Klein modeling or something like that.
Yeah, his brother's a top model, yeah, for sure. So his mom's a photographer. So, but yeah, just a guy who kind of. Was, you know, well, I talked about it, very driven. He knew what he wanted to be. And people, I'm sure at one point, saw this tall, lanky kid, like, what, get the hell out of here. But hard work, you know, he's been locked in ever since he went to college. And a guy who, I'll give Mike Mack this one. Mike Mack, we give him a hard time for a lot of his draft picks. He made a lot of bad moves, and now he's no longer in, you know, NFL. But I give him credit for Mike Mayock, for Max Crosby. I think that was his guy. I think he was very high on him early on in the process, and they kind of waited for the right time. They didn't pick him too high, and I know Mac would say this, like if people talk about Clee Farrell being a bad pick, but if he had picked Max Crosby in the first round and Clee, they switched the picks, then he's a genius. We can't do that, but
you don't do that.
But
no.
Still, but at least he did get a a foundational a franchise guy late in the draft, the guy they were targeting all along. So definitely one feather in Mike's cap for sure, and Max definitely has been above and beyond in anyone's dreams as far as his impact and his not only on the field but also in the locker room. He's a great leader and a guy who, well, has shown he'll play no matter what, and guys follow him, and the defense is definitely better because of him. So they follow his example.
Can you imagine the reaction if they had taken Max Crosby with the number four pick of the draft? I mean, by the end of the year when he was second in the defensive player of the year, rookie of the year voting, yeah, you would have been like, okay, great. But the draft day reaction had they taken Max Crosby number four would have been special.
I don't know if he's going to win defensive player of the year, but watching this defense week in and week out, like this defense without Max Crosby would probably be close to the bottom of the league, bad, but he makes such an impact that like this is almost a mid-tier type of defense. So it's pretty amazing to watch how one person can make such an impact on an entire unit.
All right, well, let's get to a few questions here. And Vic, you brought up Mayock, so we'll start with a question that
Mayock question, sweet. Let's
no, not a Mayock question, but it does relate to the general manager position. Jim Caldwell wants to know, what are the odds that Champ Kelly is retained? Does Jim it Caldwell? Hinge on these? Yeah, not that Jim Caldwell, but this job Jim the coach. Caldwell.
He's like, yeah, well,
it's like, yeah, what are the like? Do I need to call Champ Kelly if I want a job here?
It probably is that Jim. What's up, Jim?
Does it hinge on these last five games? And this goes back to a question I think Vic, you asked him when you sat down with him about, how do you approach kind of auditioning for this job? Whereas Antonio Pierce, like you are coaching these games out there. You've got, you've got these, what was it, nine games that he's going to end up coaching. You have that to stack up there as evidence. This is what I've done. When you're the GM who takes over the day after the trade deadline, there really aren't acquisitions you can do. There's not a whole lot you can do to tangibly show why you deserve to keep the job. We know he was a candidate before, and he's a guy that we expect will be a GM somewhere someday. But what do we think the odds are, and what is what will he be judged on if he's a candidate for the GM job?
Yeah, I think he's definitely in a different boat than Antonio is. I think you mentioned Mark interviewed him for this job. He's so I think in the back of his mind, I think Mark has a pretty good idea of what he wants to do in terms of the GM. So I think, therefore, I would say Champ has a pretty good chance of being back. That's my gut feeling. I think because you can't really evaluate him on what happens his last five games or the previous four games, because and you can't really say, well, would you have done what Ziegler did here? Which was your move?
I would not have drafted this guy.
Yeah, so it's very hard to do that now. So I think it's just looking at his overall, his career, and why you liked him as a candidate in the first place, his mentality, his relationships with people, his kind of some of his thoughts on maybe this year's draft class, which I talked about some guys already. So I think in this case, I think Mark has a pretty good idea that if he wants to go that direction or not, and my guess is he is leaning towards going with Champ Kelly as a GM.
All you have to do is show the receipts that you wanted to trade the house for CJ Stroud. If you have receipts for that, then you get
there are no such receipts. That report was I was gonna say a bad word, but that report was bogus. There are no such receipts about somebody wanted CJ Stroud. I mean, Bryce Young was the guy everybody was talking about, not CJ Stroud.
I think with Champ, like Vic said, is more of a body of work with him. Like, they already considered him a potential GM candidate before, his tenure with the Raiders. And while they had a lot of, personnel mistakes the last couple of years, I think, they still have a favorable view of him as a candidate. And so he'll be one of the leaders, I'm sure. But, while he can't really influence the roster the last few games of the season, I think it, wouldn't hurt if like some of the rookies, started to do a little bit more and some of the, the free agent additions that they made, like a Robert Spillane or Brandon Faison comes in and starts playing well all of a sudden, like that kind of stuff. Like if you made those moves that helps the team finish strong or finish competitively, however the record shakes out, I think that wouldn't hurt them.
Terry Wilson's got nine pressures on the year. So if he could get a little more pressures, that'd be good for everybody, I think.
All right, here we got a question from Cody Rossmore. I read an article by one of your competitors that Dave Ziegler discovered the polio vaccine and tried to warn Napoleon and tried to warn Napoleon not to invade Russia. True?
That's good.
True? Good. Is that true?
Yeah, sources say.
Sources familiar with the thinking, yeah.
Yeah, I think I took a shot at that writer on Twitter. People informed me to like to list all the things he has wrong this year, and that's not my job, but I just think you got to be careful what you read. And I think we'll see what happens with that person in the future. But I think we might see some possible repercussions in terms of being loose with the facts.
Here we go from Eames. He wants to know, it's in the past, but it's informative as to Mark's upcoming head coach and GM hires. Did Mark give complete control over all personnel decisions to Dave Ziegler? Given the last two GM tenures, it's imperative that Mark empowers his GM to have the final say on personnel. I mean, I think contractually, Ziegler was the personnel guy. Nowadays, the way so many of these tenures are set up, they try to make them more partnerships, right? And so it's like, you know, yes, this guy has the final say, but you know, you're when you're hiring Ziegler and McDaniels together, you know, it's a package deal. It's a package group. You're bringing them both in from the Patriots. I think you're looking for guys that are going to form a consensus. So I think that's where it gets tricky. Whereas, like, yeah, Ziegler does have the power, did have the power to say no, but are you going to tell your head coach no? A lot of times you're not.
Yeah, I mean, that was like, I'm pretty sure it was like my first question when it got introduced, was asking, you know, who has that final personnel power? And Ziegler said it was him. And I think that was the case. But like you said, I mean, I think I remember when Peter King was in their draft room, they had to take Tyree Wilson, like when they were discussing trading up with the Cardinals, I believe it was, to try to draft that offensive tackle. He asked him, like, do you want to do this before doing it? So it's like, there's, even though he has final say, he's not going to just do things and tell McDaniels after, you know? And so, you know, pretty much every significant move they made, whether it was Jimmy Garoppolo or Chandler Jones or Tyree Wilson or, you know, some of these bigger moves, Davante Adams, obviously, like, it's really a joint thing. And so there's not really any way for either of them to, you know, retroactively say, oh, I wouldn't have done this or I wouldn't have done that. Like, they did it together, you know. So speaking back to that report that we just alluded to, like, that kind of stuff that comes out now is not really worth putting too much thought into.
Yeah, and we're talking about going to another Mike Mack mentioned, but when Mack was let go, I don't know if fans were like, well, was that guy a Gruden guy or is that guy a Mack guy? Who wants that? So I think a lot of people are trying to do that now, but I think, you know, Josh and Dave were definitely much more closely tied. They're hired together. I think they definitely were sharing, you know, the whole Patriots, you know, way mentality, way of thinking. So they're trying to fit guys into that school, you know. So I think you look at their moves, and I'm sure there are some guys, one guy is higher on the other and vice versa, and it kind of would you know, kind of form a consensus. I'm sure Champ was involved. Champ had a vote, I'm sure. And I think Mark Davis definitely has a say. People, I know he says he's not involved in personnel moves, but he's the owner. Of course, he has a say in terms of the checkbook. And I mean, not a huge say, but definitely he weighs in at times. So I think it is definitely, in this case, hard to say which guy was a, you know, Ziegler guy, which guy was a McDaniels guy. I think they definitely were working together and pretty much like, you know, they were, I'm not sure if they were, I guess they still are good friends. So I think they definitely were always talking about those kind of things around the clock.
Yeah. And this coach GM model where the coach has the final say, it just doesn't work. I mean, we've seen it fail across the league. You know, Belichick made it work for a while, but I mean, his drafts have been pretty terrible recently. It's just two separate skills, you know. Like, I understand a coach will want guys to fit his scheme more, but sometimes as a GM, you have to get the more talented player and force that coach to work this player into your scheme. So it's just, I think it's two separate skills that need to stay separate, especially for this next hire, whoever's going to be, even if it's a hot candidate that really is trying to demand, you know, too much personnel power. I think as an owner or GM, you have to resist that and say, no, we're going to keep it separate.
I mean, I don't think there's zero scenarios where it doesn't work, where the coach has the final say. I mean, the 49ers is a good example.
Yeah.
They built a phenomenal roster. Yeah, they built a phenomenal roster. And like, I think that's a good partnership where Kyle Shanahan lets John Lynch do a lot of the stuff. And then, but there are certain decisions that, you know, that Shanahan is going to make. And so it's all about, you know, and that was a unique hire where they hired Shanahan first and then it was, you know, Shanahan essentially hired the GM where, you know, he didn't really even have a previous relationship with John Lynch other than having met at production meetings when Lynch was a broadcaster. So, I mean, there are some scenarios where it can work, but I mean, it's got to take two unique people that are really talented. And so, we'll see which way he goes. I mean, they've obviously kind of tried different routes. You know, the Gruden route where Gruden was in charge, it certainly did not work out. You know, I think the Reggie McKenzie route of having the GM that was making those decisions, it was on a right track, you know, and we know how that went off track. But I mean, there were some good moves there, although obviously outside of the 2014 draft, he really struggled in the second and third round to really find any impact players. But all right, final question here. This is from Skate Snow H2O Dad. Wants to know, does anyone on the panel? Yeah. He wants to know, does anyone on the panel feel that Aiden O'Connell has the talent to be a Super Bowl quarterback?
What?
If not, then I think we know what the Raiders' biggest priority is going forward.
I don't even know if he's a starter. It's a Super Bowl quarterback. What the fuck are we doing? Oh, man. I don't know. Nobody knows.
Like, that's a no then.
No. Like, you know, but I think we've seen, at least I'll speak for myself. Like, I've seen enough to where I think that Aiden is like a fine option to more so be like a backup that can be a spot starter if needed, step in case of injury. But I don't think he's the guy, you know, moving forward in terms of building around him for years to come. And so I think at some point they're going to find themselves in a position where they have to go get a guy, whether that's this offseason or in the future. It depends on a myriad of factors, but yeah, I think that's fine. I mean, he was a fourth round pick. Like, it wasn't like he's a first rounder and this is some huge failure if he doesn't end up being the full-time starter moving forward. But I think even what he is now, like, I think that makes that pick a valuable one and you know, him worth having on the roster moving forward.
Yeah, I think he's earned that. I think he's earned, we'll see what happens the last five games. He's earned definitely number two job. And also, I think he's earned a chance to compete. Unless you bring in a big name guy next year, he's earned a chance to compete for that job in camp next year. I mean, I'm not sure he'd be a favorite, but I think he's earned a chance to say, you know what, I want to compete. And so that's good. Competition's always good. So I think like you have seen signs where he's gotten better. I think we definitely need to see more these next five games. But yeah, for where he was drafted, definitely it was a good value pick. And you see, Like Deshaun said, he's an NFL quarterback. I'm not sure he's a starting quarterback, but he's an NFL quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, like, just look like Gardner Minshew right now, what he's doing with the Colts. Like, I mean, next year it's going to be right back to Richardson, of course. But, I mean, he was able to take over in case of injury, and, like, they're still in the playoff hunt because he's still solid enough to step in and keep the offense afloat. And so that role, you know, has real value. I don't think it's some failure if O'Connell isn't a starter.
I mean, Super Bowl quarterback's a wide range, too. I mean, Trent Dilfer was a Super Bowl quarterback. Wow. And Tom Brady was Trent a Super Dilfer. Bowl quarterback. So
Build a defense like the Ravens. Come on.
But, I mean, I think if you're talking about starter, I think he's played well enough, you know, for that to be a fair question. And like Vic said, I think, you know, he's played well enough to where you could consider him a possible starter next year, but not well enough for you to cement that in paper and say, yeah, he's going to be your starter. I think his ceiling is probably around, like, I mean, if his absolute ceiling is probably like Kirk Cousins, if everything goes perfect and he, you know, gets that type time to develop that mental mastery that he needs to get to that level. But yeah, I mean, to me, you still have to be aggressive looking for a quarterback. He hasn't played well enough to where, you know, like, you're not going to be aggressive trying to add a quarterback next year.
All right. With that, we will we'll make some game picks. Raiders are home underdogs against the Minnesota Vikings. Who wants to bat leadoff and make your pick?
I'll go first. I got the Raiders winning 23-20. I think it's hard to really pick these games because, I mean, Josh Dobbs, we talked about, who the hell knows what he's going to do. But I think the Raiders are in a good spot coming off the bye. I think the Vikings can't really run the ball, so they're a little one-dimensional in terms of you know, the defense having a chance to prepare and maybe make some plays. I think the offense, again, they should, I mean, I know the Vikings are going to blitz, but there's enough talent there where you should be able to make enough plays to win this game. So I think the home crowd will be a factor. I think, well, they're 4-2 at home this year, so I think that's pretty good. They got two games coming up at home, kind of a chance to really at least cement that home field advantage going forward. So I think, yeah, have them winning.
Yeah, I think I got the Raiders 20-17. I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of offense in this one, kind of between, you know, some of the issues with maybe O'Connell handling the Vikings' aggressive defense. I think they'll give him some problems. And, you know, this offense has a lot of talent, but we've seen all year, like, that hasn't, like, they're just not, it's not a good offense for whatever reason. Like, they can't put up points. And so I don't think that's going to change suddenly in this one. I do think their defense, with the way that they've been playing, should be able to bottle up this Vikings offense pretty decently with, like Vic said, them not being able to run the ball and seeming like Josh Dobbs is coming back down to earth a little bit. And also, you would figure that, you know, Justin Jefferson, I'm sure he wouldn't be out there if he's not good to go, but I'm not sure if he's 100% yet coming back from that injury. So I think the Raiders, you know, get back in the win column and, you know, keep hope alive a little bit, you know, going ahead and moving into the game against the Chargers next week.
This game is going to be close. I think it's kind of a coin toss almost. I would say, I'm going to say Raiders 24, Vikings 23. It's going to be a narrow game. Vikings will get a few big plays. I think the Raiders will be able to hold them in the red zone. And I think this could be finally a Hunter Renfrow game where he might be the answer against some of these blitzes and off coverage. I think having a bye week does help when you're preparing for a defense that's so unique like the Vikings. So I'll say the Raiders squeak one out.
Yeah, Vic, I'm not going to throw cold water on your great 4-2 home record stat, but they beat the Jets, the Giants, the Patriots, and a Packers team that was at the time in that range as one of the worst offenses in the league. So I don't know how much stock I can put in the 4-2 home record, just considering who the four home wins are against. I'm going to help the Raider Nation out by, I'm not going to make this consensus. I'm going to go Vikings 27, Raiders 20, Justin Jefferson.
What a spin. This guy is like, game. I'm helping you guys out by picking you to lose.
Raiders are nowhere good enough to be a consensus pick to beat the Vikings at home as a home underdog with Justin Jefferson.
It's a feel good show, man. Post bye, we're all like getting fans excited about what's coming, and you're like just pouring cold water on me, on Deshaun, on the fans. Just cold water.
I mean, you're hyping up a 4-2 home record.
Hey, man, you play who you play. Man, that's who play the schedule. You can't play different teams.
Yeah, and I can draw an asterisk on that.
I don't know, man. Packers are great right now.
They weren't great then.
That's a great win.
They were awful. All right, guys. Well, that'll wrap up this episode of State of the Nation. We'll have to figure out a schedule next week because next Thursday we're going to be playing a football game, taking on the Chargers. So, we'll let you guys know what we do in terms of next week's pod. But we'll have something for you to get you updated, and we'll see how the Raiders do with these two games in 5 days.
All right, y'all.
All right, guys.
All right. Hasta luego.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.